Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 24 of the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, in the flesh, is Jared Kimber, who you can literally find everywhere. I'm just going to poke him to check if he's real. Yeah, he's real. All right, so we've got lots to talk about. I won't be giving out shout-outs to the comments people today because the screen is far and my eyesight is kind of weak. But you guys will have to bear with me and we'll take all the super chats towards the end. Let's start with India versus Zimbabwe. There is a 5-match T20I series currently underway, and it's actually tied at one game each. Mm-hmm. Zimbabwe managed to defeat what was a second-string Indian team, of course, because none of their World Cup winners are featuring. But still, it is a pedigreed team. They've played lots of T20 cricket. And what this is basically is once again a loud cry to the ICC to somehow facilitate the lesser-ranked teams, at least in this format, so that they get more exposure.
It's incredible that when you think back on it, Zimbabwe didn't actually make the World Cup, right?
Yeah.
Because they played some good cricket. Was it against Bangladesh, I think, coming into this series as well? They're a hard team to play at home because their wickets are, well, actually, after watching this World Cup, they probably would have been quite well suited to this World Cup. So I think they're a difficult team, all things considered, to go up against. I thought the funny thing was that when the first game when India lost, everyone was like, that's it. We should never have asked for the kids to play. We're all idiots, blah, blah, blah. And then the next game, they made, was 160 in 10 overs or something?
Something like that.
And suddenly everyone was like, no, so we would have won the World Cup easier if Abhishek Sharma had played. So confirmation bias is going out everywhere. But no, look, no doubt Zimbabwe is a team with lots of flaws, but they still have Sikander Raza, so they still win some games.
Yeah, and it was interesting. When I posted a tweet that Zimbabwe have just defeated India's second string team, there were two kinds of responses that I was getting a lot. One was like, this is not second string, it's better than that. And then there were the other responses which were like, oh no, this is India's C team. So I don't think that's quite correct. I'm more inclined towards, yes, these guys are still pretty damn good and they would make first teams for most other countries.
It looked to me like it was a bit of a development squad, right? Like
yeah.
you had a couple of players there where I thought to myself, it wasn't the players. It was more that they put it together in a way where they were like, this isn't properly a cricket team. Mm-hmm. It's about 11 players we want to learn a little bit more about. And so we're going to put that together. And we've seen that before with teams. So
every time India go to Zimbabwe, this is what they do, don't they?
Well, it's what a lot of teams do with Zimbabwe now. Right? Except for Bangladesh, who, to be fair to them, went with a full-strength team and still didn't make it work.
And Pakistan, Shaheen, Naseem, Haris Rauf, everyone plays Zimbabwe. They never rest those guys. So.
Yeah.
There are still some teams out there that don't send development squads to Zimbabwe.
I forgot of Pakistan, of never resting anyone ever.
Yes. Yes. Burn them out. Burn out the fast bowlers. But back to Zimbabwe getting more exposure and other teams as well. We saw how the USA did really well in the World Cup and their next major team, major game versus a proper team is in the 2026 T20 World Cup. So they don't actually have any series scheduled in between, which makes me wonder, Jared, and this is just me thinking out loud, maybe the best way to go about this is that if T20Is, bilaterals, are going to exist, you might as well have quadrangular series, right? Have two top eight nations and then bring in two associate nations or lesser ranked teams like Zimbabwe or Ireland. And that way you can give them more exposure because we saw how the Netherlands benefited.
What makes you think that people want to give other nations exposure?
I don't know. I mean, people want that. I'm not sure the ICC does.
Look, the ICC isn't in charge of bilateral cricket anyway, are they? So,
Yeah. Look,
I think realistically, probably if you're coming up to a major tournament now, I don't think it's a bad idea for you to bring over two or three teams, spend a little bit more money if you're India or England or Australia, and say to yourself, okay, we can bring over, you know, Namibia, Netherlands, Nepal, like different kinds of teams
you
might have to go up against. So you could do that with another couple of big teams there as well. It's just not the way that it's done, though. And so, you know, again, we're in a situation where it's not likely.
It's unfortunate because the gulf between associate teams and top-ranked full-member nations is as smaller as we've ever seen it. Like, this is new territory now. And clearly, this is the format that should be used to grow the game beyond just the Commonwealth nations, right? But it doesn't seem like they view it that way, at least people who run the show.
Look, you don't make any money, really, from bilateral T20 internationals.
That's fair.
And I think that's an issue that a lot of teams have around the world. You know, I reckon about every 2 months, someone sends me a question saying, why don't we have tri-series anymore? And it's like,
We're about to have tri-series.
We are about to have one. And it's because they don't make money.
Yeah.
Right? If you can work out how to make money off them, that's a little bit different. But most people can't work out how to make money off them. So they don't exist. And it's the same with this. Your basic premise is fine. Hmm. Right. And look at, you know, you look at that series back in the old days when Australia A and Zimbabwe and England played.
Yeah.
We've had things like this before, but we're not really likely to have them again.
Yeah. I mean, let's see what the future holds. And maybe, you know, in the future, we could have a 32-team T20 World Cup. Who's to say that's not a possibility, right? Last bit on Zimbabwe before we move on to India.
Mm-hmm.
Tendai Chatara and Sikandar Azabat were the guys who won them that game. They took 3 wickets each. That's a bit of a concern that the old heads are the ones who are still winning games of cricket for Zimbabwe, and the younger lot is not really standing up, you know, to that level, or at least it hasn't yet. There's one guy, Brian Bennett, is he?
Mm-hmm.
He looks impressive. But apart from him, I can't really think of some new players that Zimbabwe has introduced, because it's been a while since we've been seeing Ryan Burl, the two paces, Muzurabani and Ingarawa. But in order to kind of move up a level, someone's going to have to come up and raise their hand and say that I belong here.
Well, they're... best young batting prospect out is probably playing county cricket at the moment,
mm-hmm.
And isn't likely to play for Zimbabwe in the short term anyway. Who knows what happens in the long term with him?
Maybe they can get Tom Curran.
So there's an issue. Look, their bowling's good. Their batting is just not good. Mm-hmm. It's not even close to world class at the moment. And I think the bigger problem is probably... They rely a lot on Ryan Burl and Sikandar Raza, who are both okay batters, but not frontline top order players. So I think they end up in a situation there. But yeah, they've been in this position for ages, where I remember me and Barrett did a podcast a couple of years ago going, you look at this bowling attack and you're like, you put a subpar batting lineup next to it and they're a good team.
Yeah.
They can't even get a subpar batting lineup. Mm-hmm. They really struggle to put runs on. You look at some of their openers and their top order players and you're like, what?
The one guy I had hopes from was Wesley Madhuwere, and he hasn't quite developed that level which I expected him to. But yeah, you're right. The batting, and that's the case with most teams these days. We saw the World Cup, right? Bangladesh, Sri Lanka.
It's funny. So someone said this to me the other day. They actually said that there's a lot of associate teams who are really good at bowling and not really good at batting.
Hmm.
But I think people had forgotten that, you know, you had USA... and Canada, who were really good at batting and couldn't bowl.
That's right.
So I think there's a couple. There does seem to be, outside of what you would almost say, you said Sri Lanka and Bangladesh.
Hmm.
You could throw in about 4 or 5 other associate teams.
The Netherlands are pretty decent at bowling.
That's what I mean. Yeah. So there's a few. And Nepal is certainly a bowling team, right? Uganda is a bowling team. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
You and I could bat for Uganda.
Yeah. And so. It does seem that teams have found it easier to find bowling, especially in T20 cricket, than they have batting. That said, I think Zimbabwe's bowling is really, really good. I think it's better than some of those, by a distance, than some of those teams. But, you know, Joy Lord Gumbi is not quite at the level you need for international T20 player, Bayra.
That is unfortunately true. Let's come to India. They did lose the first game, but they won the second one by a colossal 100-run margin. They scored 234 in the first innings. Ruturaj Gaikwad scored 77 of 47. Rinku played really well, 48 of 22. But those guys weren't the stars of that game. The star was Abhishek Sharma. Smashed his maiden T20I ton for India of 46 deliveries. I mean, with all the retirements coming in India's T20 team, I personally feel that he's a shoo-in at this point. Yeah. You've got to go with him. And Jared, this isn't even like his fastest effort. We know that he could probably someday beat this record and smash 100 and, I don't know, 32 deliveries?
Look, I mean, I think it's a good sign. We saw Travis Head play in those West Indian wickets that didn't help him beat Travis Head, and he was still fine. But we know Travis Head's a test player, right?
Yeah.
We needed to see Abhishek on some of the dodgier wickets play at that level. If I was an Indian fan, I'd be quite excited that he's playing on these, you know, interesting pitches at times.
They are interesting, right? It's not an IPL flat deck.
That's what I mean, yeah.
So that's very promising if you look at it that way. Plus, when I look at the younger lot in India, the batters at least, you know, I feel like you've got to go with some of these guys who go ballistic. And Abhishek Sharma is the epitome of that.
The most ballistic.
Yeah, that he's that player, right? And I mean, if I were an Indian fan, I would be really, really excited. Plus the range on this kid.
Yeah.
He has shots all over the park.
No, look, I'm a huge fan. I obviously would have picked him for the World Cup. How he would have gone on those wickets against a good team, that would have been fun, but we never get to see that. But yeah, no, I'm a big fan of the way he plays. And yeah, I think you're right. He's an automatic one, isn't he, going forward?
Has to be. I mean, if he isn't, I would be very, very surprised. And it's unfortunate for a lot of these fringe players, right? Like, Gaikwad is such a quality player.
Yeah.
But when you start constructing India's first string team, even with the retirements, kind of misses out. At least in my books, he does.
Yeah, I wonder where he fits in long term. I think they have other options in that position, but he's still a really talented player as well.
Yes, of course. He's very risk-free, very classy, and can at times turn it up a notch. Coming to India's bowling, their star performer in this series was Ravi Bishnoi. He took 4 for 13 and 2 for 11, which is what, 6 for 24 and 8 overs?
Sounds good.
That's more wickets than he took in the IPL, I feel.
I don't think he's ever taken a 4-wicket haul in the IPL.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And he did that in the game that India lost. But, you know, now that India are looking forward, Yuzi Chahal is their go-to wrist spinner, right? I mean, right-arm wrist spinner, of course, Kuldeep's around. But I feel like now in this cycle, India will probably give that green signal to Ravi Bishnoi to get more game time in and play some stronger teams. And he has to be that guy because Rahul Chahar has slipped, even though he was decent in a few of those IPL games, right? And who am I missing here?
Leg spinners?
Yeah. I don't think I am. Mark Pandey?
No.
Nah.
Look, the problem with Bishnoi, I think, is going to be that if they have Kuldeep on the side, they both basically spin the ball the same way because he bowls wrong. One bowls wrong into one bowl's leg breaks.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that the pairing works great. And also, neither of them can bat. And I know people will say, oh, but of recent time, neither of them can bat, right? So I do think from that perspective, they're probably a little bit further behind than where they should be to have both of them. But Kuldeep can get injured. Who knows how many finger spinning all around us they'll have into the future.
That's
so there will be some flexibility. Because if you look at the moment, Akshar should stick around for a while, but Akshar does get injured. Then they've got Hardik Pandya and Reddy as their seam bowling all-rounders. So they might have some seam bowling flexibility to be able to bring in an extra wrist spinner who doesn't bat at times. Yeah. But my issue would be that they then sort of spin the ball in the same direction as each other.
I think, you know, Yuzi Chahal, I've been a fan. As you know, at times I feel like I overrate him, and then at times I feel like the world underrates him. I'm still not sure where I fall exactly on Yuzi Chahal, but I feel like he could have played more for India. Again, he's only adding one skill, right? Yeah. Because he's not the best fielder, can't hold a bat. Bishnoi is a better fielder.
Yeah.
That's for certain. He's got better hair. That's also a thing.
Okay.
So I feel like it's time that India now start investing in him. I mean, Rahul Chahar also has great hair. They have great hair wrist spinners. Kuldeep is the weak one.
Amit Mishra?
He loses this. Also, he's what, 50?
Yeah.
Another spinner, spin bowling all-rounder who did well for India in these games was Washington Sundar. Fringe player for a long time. Yeah. Someone who they rated really highly when he was coming up the ranks. He was part of that Australia Test series that they won and, you know, had some crucial performances over there as well. 1 for 28 and 2 for 11 in these two games. Ravi Jadeja is gone. He has retired from T20Is. Now, I know Washington spins the ball the other way. His bowling arm is different. But he seems like an almost like-for-like replacement, especially if him and Akshar both play. Then they spin the ball different ways.
Yeah, I think the problem, if you're Charles' biggest fan, I might be Washington's biggest fan. I was there when RCB, they had a choice between him and Gautam, I think it was. And I was like, guys, what are we talking about here? Let's get Washington. He was misused at RCB. And he hasn't really come good for other franchises since. I'm not sure where his best spot in the batting order is. Where with Jadeja, as you said, like for like, at least we know Jadeja's going to bat 7.
Yeah. Right?
Bowling, I think he might work quite well because he can be your new ball spinner. And India probably haven't had a new ball spinner for a while. Not that they haven't had guys like Akshar who can do it, but he's probably more of a specialist. If you can get 2 overs out of him early on and he can bat at number 7 with Akshar in the side, I think that's quite a good mashing of skills. He just needs to get better. I still think, I think he's still quite young.
Like, yeah, I would like to think
23, 24
so.
Maybe.
Has to be somewhere around that age bracket. We can't even look at the comments. Someone would have told us by now.
So I still think that, like a lot of all-rounders, he might actually develop at 27, 28 a little bit later. But they know that, I think there's probably a lot of Indian fans who are just frustrated that he's always around because he doesn't do that much. Look, I've never talked to anyone from India from this, but if you're asking me as a scout slash analyst, I'm like, the reason is there isn't another player who can combine those two different skills together. So keep him around. He might not play in World Cups, but, you know, eventually if he does break free, he'll be used to the environment and he'll be able to play at that level. Play him in some games like the Zimbabwe one, which doesn't mean as much, right?
That's true. Also in the IPL, I feel like he's stuck in the wrong team. He's not going to get much game time at the Sunrisers Hyderabad. He probably needs to go to a team which is in desperate need of a genuine all-rounder, even, I'd say. Like, if you look at potential, he could develop into that. Right now, of course, he's not there yet.
Yeah.
But?
No. I mean, what you really need is a situation where a team needs a new ball spinner and then probably a number seven, right? And he doesn't have to bat at number seven, but someone who can do that. But he has to find a zone in the game where he bats plus.
Yeah.
They've tried him as an opener and that hasn't worked. I know they've tried him down the order and that hasn't worked. I wonder if he's not at his absolute best, probably a number four, number five, who comes in and smashes spin. This is why I think he's so talented, because I do think he has roles that he can do. The problem is that he's a little bit like a crap version of Sam Curran. You kind of have to mold the side around him. RCB and Sunrisers are probably two sides he shouldn't have been at.
That's true.
You know, if he would have been at Delhi when they were developing all those kids, and him and Akshar together, that would have been a really fascinating part.
Or if he is in Mumbai in the Mohammad Nabi role, right? Because bats around that same area, and he doesn't have to bowl four over. Or, well, maybe he does, given that Chawla is also like 50, right? So, I mean,
he will give them another spinner that can't bowl four overs.
Yeah, basically. But yeah, I feel like his ceiling is highest, just that he's maybe taken a bit longer to develop. But again, don't know his age on the top of my head. I would like to think that he's still quite young.
He's not old.
One last player that I need to talk about with respect to India, and this is another fringe player who they've tried every now and then in, you know, some good series as well, Avesh Khan. And he has shown signs of brilliance, and he's a hot and cold sort of bowler, I feel. When he goes for runs, he goes for plenty. When he does well, he takes a lot of wickets.
Yeah.
And that's what he did in this series as well. 3 for 15 in one game and then 1 for 29 in the other. He had an interesting IPL season. You know, some games he would give match-winning performances, and then in the other games, he was somewhat the weak link. But with so many other seamers around in, you know, or at India's disposal, I'm not sure if he, at least at this point, has that level of quality where he can usurp, you know, the other guys like Shami, Siraj, and well, Bumrah is different level.
He probably won't get past Bumrah, you're right. Yeah. Look, he's an interesting player. They really like him because we've seen him quite a bit now. Was he in the World Cup squad or in the back?
He was the reserve.
Yeah. Whereas, obviously, I thought Natarajan was a better option, but maybe.
Yeah.
But also, I think they probably thought to themselves, we know what Natarajan could do. We don't need another death bowler. We need someone else. Look, Avesh Khan, there was one year when I reckon he bowled about half a yard quicker when he was younger. You put that together with the skills he has and his composure, he's a really good player. He has to get that half a yard back, right? And I don't know. I remember, you know, Tim Southee and Chris Wokes are really interesting players because they both put on pace later on in their career. That's what he's going to have to do. And if he doesn't do that, he's not accurate enough, he's not skillful enough to be that little bit slower. But when he was younger, I rated him very highly. So again, him and Washington are probably project players as much as anything, which is another reason why I don't understand why Avesh was ever reserved for the World Cup, but that's a different argument.
Yeah, I remember him at under 19 level and he was really impressive. Do you remember that seamer? What was his name? The Shubman Gill under 19 team. Kamlesh Nagar Koti.
Yes.
Where the hell did he go?
Did he not get injured a lot?
Did he? Because I was really impressed with him at under 19 level at least. And then he did get a pretty good IPL deal. I think Kolkata signed him or something.
But he certainly played some IPL, didn't
he? Yeah, he's clearly fallen off the radar. I haven't seen him in a long time. But yeah, India's development squad looks good. They have 3 more T20Is, so good game time. And after this, they have Sri Lanka. The performers from this series surely should get picked for that one.
Yeah, I mean, let's see what they do next, I suppose. I think they are you know, they can just muck around with it a little bit now, can't they? That, I mean, that's what I would be doing. They don't have a coach or literally anyone in charge at the moment.
Yeah. Lakshman is in charge for this series, but then...
But I mean, really in charge, you know what I mean? So if it was me, I'd just be thinking to myself, okay, well, let's just get as much legs under players we want to develop and see, and also probably answer some questions on some players. So Abhishek is a very good one. We knew he was going to play in this anyway.
Yes.
But they need to answer some questions with Abhishek on bad wickets and things like that.
Hmm. And I hope Harshit Rana gets some game time because they've picked him for this series and he did do quite well in the IPL, bowled some good slow ones at the death. Yep. And he can crank it up a bit. Too. And what, he's what, 22?
Yeah, he's very young.
Something like that, right? Also great.
Stop asking ages when we're this far from the computer and neither of us can Google it.
Yeah, that does pretty much wrap up our review of the India-Zimbabwe series. You guys are watching Overthrows with Behram and Jared and we'll be back after this short break.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Welcome back to Overthrows. You guys are with Behram and Jared. Next up, we'll move to the women's series. India's women are playing South Africa's women in India. And there was a solitary test match in which India defeated South Africa by 10 wickets. It was a very commanding victory and it was played in Chennai. India scored 603 for 6 in the first innings and then declared Shefali Verma 205 off 197 and the in-form Smriti Mandhana 149 off 161. They baseballed it.
Wow. I mean, obviously, they're all close personal friends with Ben Duckett. He played a big role in this. That was incredible to watch. MB play. I looked at some of the clips and I was just like, they're just smashing the ball everywhere here. I thought it was very, very interesting. It was a pretty good batting wicket, though, I think. Yeah.
I mean, there were more 50s, right? Jemima, Richard Ghosh, Harmanpreet, they all got 50s, but we have to take into account that South Africa were a bowler short. Marizan wasn't bowling in this test match.
Now, I asked this on the group, but I can't remember if anyone answered. Was she supposed to not be bowling? Or did she see the pitch and decide not to bowl? No.
I was in Hamburg, dude.
I'm assuming she was picked as a batter for this test.
Yeah, but like, surely you give her an over when things are going so bad.
Well, she must have been injured. That's what I mean.
Like, has to be.
We can't even see Hypercourse if he says it. it was, the bits I saw, incredible batting week. What did South Africa make in reply?
So South Africa actually didn't do all too badly. They made 200-something the first time and then 373. Yeah. So they they had a good opportunity to draw this game at one point.
Yeah, exactly.
India also dropped some catches.
Yeah, it was a tough wicket. It's interesting to think that India batted so hard so early on. So what did they make on day one? Was it 500?
I think so.
Yeah.
I know Cheyenne was going crazy about it. I was literally on a train coming to you, I think.
Yeah.
That's what was happening that day. And I was just looking at his updates and he was enjoying it.
So it was extraordinary from that point of view.
Hmm.
And it really does show, I think, how much cricket has changed.
Yes.
Women's cricket was incredibly slow, in for a long time, especially in test match cricket. And things have just changed now. And to get a day like that, look, we know this isn't a full strength. Well, it's not that it's not full strength South Africa. It's what South Africa have left.
Yeah.
Is the best way of putting it at the moment. And if Marathon's not going to bowl, it's just going to get worse, right? So, look, there's some definite issues there with that team. And there's no doubt about that. But certainly exciting that we get these ridiculous sorts of numbers. And yeah, thanks to Ben Duckett and everyone else.
Yeah, if you look at South Africa's response with the bat, of course, Marizan did score 74 in the first innings. And then their star batter was Suna Luce. Mm. She scored, 109 and 65. So 65 in the first, 109 in the second. Laura Wolvaart got a ton as well. And she kind of blocked it out. Nadine de Klerk also scored a very slow 65. So even though they were far behind the eight ball in this test match, they still made a fist out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, to be honest, I wonder if India went a little bit harder thinking to themselves, this is a really good batting wicket.
Mm.
And so we need to give ourselves as much time to get the wickets as possible. And that was kind of right.
Yeah. Plus, they've been playing a lot of test cricket off late, if you know.
They are now the specialists in test cricket, aren't they?
Yeah. So I would say that at least when they play at home, they're probably the leading test side.
Feels like they've played more tests of recent times than New Zealand women have ever played.
Yeah, or Pakistan men. At least in a year. Mm. Anyway, India's player of the match was none of their batters, interestingly enough. Sne Rana was the player of the match.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, I said man of the match again. I need to fix that about myself. Did I? I don't know.
They didn't
know.
Even hear. I thought you said player of the match.
It's an easy mistake to make. But anyway, player of the match was Sne Rana. She took a 10-for, 8-for-77 in the first innings. She is a bit of a late bloomer with her right arm off break and, you know, handy runs with the bat. And she's become quite a core member of late, you know, of this Indian team.
Look, we see a lot of all-rounders coming through the women's cricket. She's obviously another one. As you said, we don't see as many women's players traditionally late bloomers. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. One is that women develop quicker than men when it comes to sport. The other one is that there hasn't always been the finances to come back in later. So there hasn't been. And so we are now seeing, of course, you know, older women, especially in the places that have leagues coming through. Not that she's old, but like rather than developing at 16, like Holly Colvin and these sorts of things, we're seeing a completely different kind of generation of cricketers coming through.
She's my age, by the way. She's 30.
She's basically dead.
I mean, women do retire earlier, but I feel like that too will change now. With all the sports science and the fact that there's money now in women's cricket, it's bound to change.
I think we'll get more women playing into their mid-30s. I don't know if we'll get a lot of women playing into their early 40s.
No woman Misbah around.
Well, just from a perspective of if you're a good enough player, right, to play, you know, a few hundred internationals from your international team as a woman, you're probably going to be in the side at 17, 18, 19. Into the 40s, you're then looking at 22, 23, 24 years of professional career. We don't see many athletes do that in general, right? Like eventually your body breaks down, you don't want to do it anymore. So I think, but you're right. I think we'll see a stretching out of women, not literally, although maybe there'll be torture devices. I don't know. But I think we'll see a stretching out of their careers. And also what we should see is less of the sort of 15, 16-year-old girls playing and more of that 17, 18, 19-year-old young women playing, which will then, again, that will extend it at the other end. And, you know, it's the old line of, I can't remember who it was, but I think it might have been Zoe Goss who said, you know, you have to decide whether you want to play for your country or pay your mortgage. They don't have to do that anymore. And so if they love the sport and their body stays good, they'll play for a long time. Like Charlotte Edwards must have played until she was old, and she started when she was young because didn't she break the world record when she was a teenager, I think? It has happened, but it's also kind of easy to do it if you're someone like Charlotte Edwards who's just obsessed with cricket and is an amateur and then gets paid at the end. You know, it's very different. I don't know. Did you see the podcast I did with Susie Bates?
No, I didn't.
It's really interesting because I was saying to her, like, is it now it's a job? Is it different and everything? And she said, yes. But it hasn't been a job my whole life. And so I can throw myself into all these leagues and take all these different jobs. Whereas some of the other women are thinking to themselves, do I really want to be away for that amount of time? So what we're really seeing is just a whole different generation of women's cricket. And on top of the fact is we're talking about national cricket as well.
Yeah.
Franchise cricket. Who knows how long some of these players will go for? Like if you're Marizan, right? Let's say she can't bowl anymore in, I don't know, 2 or 3 years' time. And I doubt that's true because I think she'll be bowling well when she's 50. But if she got, she's probably going to try and change herself into a specialist batter, right? And probably try and get some gigs from that. You know?
Yeah.
Again, probably less likely to do that in the amateur era.
If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set for you to win. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? Give NordVPN the ball. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow, promote NordVPN to pinch hit. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a bowler protects the boundaries in the death overs with nordvpn.com/Kimber today.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, if the franchises start paying the women better, then we might see a different ball game altogether in you know, the female game. Anyway, they also are currently playing a T20I series, South Africa and India, and South Africa actually beat India.
I think India were already playing T20 in the test match. So
yeah.
This is redundant.
Just some colored clothing. That's the only change. But South Africa won the first T20I. They could have won the second as well. They had posted 177, but the game got washed out. Tasmin Brits was the star of the show for South Africa. 81 and 52 to her name. Marzan scored a 50 as well. But clearly, they are a better limited over side. But this is good from South Africa because they had kind of flipped off after that T20 World Cup final run. But now this is a big victory in the context of things.
I think it's massive. I saw bits of the test match and I didn't realize it was a T20. Because I'm sure we'll be talking about New Zealand, England played as well, didn't they? So I watched some of that. I didn't even know. So when I saw the result, I was like, that's A, crazy because they just played a test match 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And B, that's huge. And again, we've talked about this. We just need more upsets in women's cricket. It's the most important thing for women's cricket at the moment is that random teams keep beating, especially Australia, England and India. But all the way through, the more upsets we get, the more we will talk about it. But also, it shows that there's an evenness to it, which we've never really seen before.
Would you categorize that as an upset, beating India in a T20I at home, or India's home?
Yeah, beating India, don't you think?
Especially after South Africa's retirements.
Yeah, you would have India in their top three, certainly, for the World Cup coming up, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, especially in those conditions.
Yeah, so
I would say maybe top two. I might even, like, I'm what, not
ahead
sure.
Of England?
I'm not sure where Australia are at right now. I mean, have you
we
seen...
We need chilies, hot for the hot take that just happened here.
Have you seen Meg Lanning's new funky hairdo?
No, I saw her dressed like a rock star or something.
Yeah, and then she went on the slide thing.
Yeah, I saw that.
Very interesting.
Enjoying her retirement.
I'm happy for her. She clearly seems to be having fun. Let's move on to England, New Zealand, of course. The last time we spoke about that series, England had a 2-0 unassailable lead in the ODIs. Mm-hmm. And now they've won two more games. They won the ODI series 3-0 and they've won the first T20. And there hasn't been much competition. And that's been a theme of England versus New Zealand throughout this year. We've covered so many games that they've played against each other. And New Zealand have, one victory? And all their losses have mostly been quite one-sided. Which tells me that New Zealand cricket is at its lowest after a long, long time.
So I've watched about a game and a half of it. Mm. And I remember thinking to myself, there were times when Pakistan women looked like they were putting more pressure on
them.
Yeah.
I think Hypocaust said the same thing. I think he tweeted it.
And I think it was the T20 game the other day. And I was going to trade the game. And then I couldn't be bothered. And I was just watching it. I think there was a veterans game on at the same time. Mm. So I was doing a little bit of flicking. Because I like to watch Usman Asfal.
Oh my God. I do not have that in the
we don't need to cover
schedule, but oh my God, I watched that too.
Also, Dan Christian's drop in the veterans cricket was one of the worst drops I've ever seen in my life. I'm sorry, Dan, but what was happening there?
Having to hear Waqar Yunus pronounce side bottom is also something.
And so, but I was watching it and I was just, the reason I was looking over is because I was like, New Zealand just have no chance in this game.
Yeah.
It was so obvious so early on. And they went with spin, and their spinners just kept getting milked for boundaries.
Hmm.
They then kept coming up with these really funky fields that their bowlers couldn't back up.
Hmm.
And I can't remember when Maya Bouchier maybe went out the seventh or eighth over in that game I was watching, and I was like, unless they lose like 5 wickets in the next 2 overs, I can't even see a way that England would be under pressure in this game.
Hmm.
I was really disappointed with New Zealand from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, and they lost to Pakistan not too long ago at home, which was also quite big. And you're right that there were times in the Pakistan-England series where Pakistan had a genuine chance of causing an upset, but I just did not get that feeling in the series from New Zealand. What I like from an England standpoint is that we saw them collapsing early on versus Pakistan. Mm-hmm. But in this series, last week we were talking about Tammy Beaumont and Maya Bouchier and how Maya Bouchier scored her maiden done and she's kind of announced herself. This week, their performers were different. Last week, Charlie Dean and Sophie were the main protagonists with the ball. This week, Lauren Bell took a fiver in the ODI and Sarah Glenn took 3 for 16 in the T20. And I love Sarah Glenn. I am probably her biggest fan as well. It's Yuzi and Sarah Glenn. In the googly union. And also with the bat, I think, Nat Siverbrunt, she stepped up.
Yeah.
She scored.
Danny White made runs, yeah, didn't she?
Danny White made like 76. What was the name? Nat Silverbrunch scored 70 odd and then a quick fire 47.
Yeah.
And they have multiple performers now in one series. And that's an improvement from the Pakistan series.
Yeah.
Because the batting did somewhat fail them.
Yeah, they weren't playing great in that series, were they? I thought Pakistan did do well with the new ball and batting against the new ball. The rest of the game was a bit dodgy at times, but that part was there. But they put some pressure back on England.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a shame for England that that's not happening with New Zealand. That's maybe not quite the situation they want to be in.
Yeah. Also, Amy Jones has been terrific recently. Mm. I love the way she strikes the ball as well. And what she gives England, along with the, what's the name of that all-rounder? Danielle?
Who?
Gibson?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They've got some firepower down
there.
And that, I think, would be very, very critical come T20 World Cup because they've got the spinners, right? Mm. If they have a long batting order which can strike the ball at a quick rate, you know, I feel like they've got most boxes checked as well. That's why I'm feeling that...
You said they're going to beat Australia. That's what I heard. Australia's not even going to make the final under Bayram's system.
If I look at the squad composition of England and India, they've got the two best slow left arms, and Radha Yadav and Sophie.
Yeah.
So that's a big plus. England have a spin trio. And India will be in conditions that suit them. So yeah, hot take. Maybe we'll make a reel out of this someday. But I feel like those two teams are stronger than Australia.
Cuts. Pace.
Anyway, that kind of wraps up our itinerary. This has never happened. What are we at? 37 minutes?
That's because we're here. There's no cricket and I've lost my voice.
Yes. And yeah, that's also a part of it. But anyway, let's move towards the Super Chats. Let's see how many we have today.
Are you... Now you want me to... Oh, we do have Super Chat.
Oh, we have one Super Chat. Wow. Never happens.
There we go. Oh, we can read it too.
Deepak Raj asks, if Muzarwani was a left-arm bowler with the same skills as now, is he S-tier? Definitely an IPL starter at least. Well, he is a PSL winner. So he's reached that level.
Yeah.
The next level, of course, is IPL. But I feel like, you know, bad PR maybe?
Yeah, it's a weird one. He, obviously, when he first came on, everyone was talking him up for a little while, and I don't think he's bowling any worse or any better now than he was when he was young. I think it's a little bit like Jason Holder, where everyone got very excited about the height.
Yeah.
And they're starting to realize that there may not be a matching of the pace with the height. You don't need to be that fast, but, you know, Jason Holder's an incredibly skillful bowler, and even he struggles in T20 sometimes. Cole Jameson as well, right?
Yes.
Having that little bit of extra pace matters. If Muzarwani was left arm, then you probably are in a situation where it wouldn't matter if he didn't have that. I don't want to make the comment I'm about to make because we are too far from the computer, but he's still young. He's not old, right? Like he's probably 1 or 2 years off his bowling peak. He might add some extra skills, I suppose, is what I'm saying. I don't think he'll get much quicker. I'd be surprised if he never played games in the IPL. Whether he's an S-tier level bowler or goes on to be a star or anything, I don't know. Deepak, the problem with your question is you can pick any bowler in the world who's right arm.
Yeah.
And say if they were left arm, no one would hit them. It's kind of true. But, you know, I don't think he could swap now.
You know who a good example of this is? Luke Wood. He got an IPL gig and I bet you that he wouldn't have gotten it if he was a right arm seamer.
Yeah, though, that's very fair. Yeah. And the young kid from South Africa who played a game.
Mapaka.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's too young.
No. Yeah. You're not picking a right-arm bowler like that unless it's like Myron Yadav or, you know, you would need to be 95 miles an hour.
Basically.
Or Marco Janssen.
Yes.
Like 19 foot tall to be playing as a teenager in the IPL, right?
Whereas
if you're left arm.
Yeah, definitely. Jared Skidd is a left-arm seamer as well. That's what I was telling him, that he could be a prized asset in the future.
He's not 6'8".
Yeah.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
There's still time.
Is that it? No more Super Chats?
I think that was just one, wasn't it?
Well, that wraps it. Thank you guys for, your one Super Chat. And just a quick reminder to everybody that you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. And we'll be back with another episode of Overthrows live next week as well. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you will need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up great clips from your podcast chats and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.